Welcome back, everyone, to the Dark Forest. Tonight is the complete story of Dogman of Death. Make sure to subscribe if you're new to the channel, and make sure to download your favorite scary stories on my Apple Podcast and Spotify, Tales from the Dark Forest. Now, let's get spooky. My eyes bursted open, flooding my vision with sunlight. I'm usually not a morning person, but the excitement accompanying our planned trip had me bursting to jump out of bed, ready to get going as soon as the sun crept into our bedroom. "Babe, wake up. Let's get a jump on traffic and get going now," I said as I nudged my sleeping fiancé Demi awake. She grunted her disapproval and muttered something about having set an alarm, but I was determined to get going so we could be at the airport waiting for our scheduled flight, without the worry of running late and potentially missing our flight. I sat up in bed, pulling the covers off my sleeping bride-to-be. Annoyed, she rolled over and dragged herself to the edge of the bed, casting a death glare at me over her shoulder. I smiled at her and marveled at her beauty. Corny, I know, but it's true. The sun cast a glow around her, and I was completely memorized. Nearly a decade together, and the feeling of awe and amazement was as present as it was the very first time dating. I looked at her, and the feeling of love and adoration washed over me. She left the bed and made her way to the bathroom, and I sat gazing into space, absent-minded. "You rushed me out of bed, now you're sitting and daydreaming?" she laughed. I snapped out of my daze and laughed with her. "I guess you're right," I acknowledged. Her dark hair glistened in the sun, made all the darker by her pale skin. It was a particularly beautiful combination of dark hair and light skin, not the goth emo kind of look you see depicted in movies. Her soul-catching eyes made that much more captivating as they twinkled in the golden rays looking down on us. I followed her into the bathroom to brush my teeth and get the day started. I could feel Demi's excitement growing as we stood together side by side, the cool smell of mint from the toothpaste engulfing us. She didn't say anything, but I could see her infectious smile building up as she brushed. Neither of us had ever been to any part of North America, and we jumped at the opportunity to take the trip. Our good friend Joseph had sent out the wedding invites months back, and we decided to take the trip to celebrate his beautiful union, while at the same time making the most of the trip and going a couple of weeks before the wedding date to see all that we could see. When we told Joseph that we would be there a few weeks before the wedding just to have a little bit of a vacation, he immediately offered us a room at his place. I'm not sure who was the most excited out of all of us, but here we were, bags packed, getting ready to take a trip across the ocean. It was an exciting prospect, giving us a chance to see another country. Demi and I had taken a few trips around Europe while we got our respective degrees. But the allure of America had always bit at Demi, and now we had the opportunity to go and take another country off the list. We spat out the toothpaste in tandem and rinsed our mouths clean. We walked back to the bedroom while Demi began her morning routine of applying dozens of skincare products to her face. Maybe she's a vampire, I thought to myself with a chuckle. And that's why she's so pale and always needs to put on products on her face. It's to protect her from the sun, my overactive imagination continued. What are you laughing at? Demi shot back at me from the bathroom. Not much, just thinking to myself, I replied to her. Thinking, huh? Well, that's a first, she retorted with a laugh. I laughed quietly at her witty reply while I opened the wardrobe and selected the best option that I could think of for traveling. Gray sweatpants, a black shirt, and a gray sweater. Somewhat stylish and extremely comfortable. In my opinion, it is extremely important to be comfortable on long trips. I never understood how people could wear suits and other such formal wear when they are traveling long distances. But different strokes for different folks. Demi soon joined me in the bedroom, donning the same travel wear as me. We always made it a habit to dress the same when we would travel. It was just a fun thing we did. Matching outfits on, we were ready to set off to the airport. I began loading the car with our suitcases and travel bags, while Demi ensured our documents were in order so that we could get through the airport easier. Boarding passes downloaded on our phones, passports secured, cash for emergencies tucked away safely in our hidden compartment within the bag. Once the final checks for anything left behind was completed, we triple-checked that the door was locked and bundled into the car. The plush leather was cold, as you would expect in winter, and the steering wheel seemed to bite my hand as I gripped it to navigate the road. Almost as if reading my mind, Demi pressed the button for the heated seats to activate, and I soon found myself suitably warm and quite cozy. I'm surprised I didn't doze off. I felt like I had snuggled back into bed. It was about a 30-minute car ride to the airport, of which most of the time we spent belting out Black Bear songs at the top of our voices. We weren't the best singers, but in the privacy of your own vehicle, fun trumps ability when it comes to entertainment. It wasn't long until we arrived at the airport and made our way to the long stay parking lot. We found our parking and slotted our car neatly into the endless rows of cars waiting for their owners to return. Bags in tow, holding hands and full of smiles, we entered the airport more than ready for our trip and adventure. The airport itself was a hub of activity. People swarmed in from every direction, some running so not to miss their flights. That wouldn't be us. We were here well ahead of time. We took a leisurely walk around the area that housed the restaurants and other eateries, deciding to have a nice sit-down meal before our flight. The boarding gate had not opened, so we had to kill time. There would be nothing better than getting something to eat. Settling in at Weatherspoon's, I couldn't help but feel a yearning for McDonald's. For some reason, if I see a McDonald's, I want it. Looking at the menu and seeing barbecue ribs quickly snapped me out of my McDonald's fixation, and I eagerly waited to give my order. "Isn't 7 a.m. rather early for ribs?" Demi asked me. She had ordered Eggs Benedict, as she often did when we went out for breakfast. Her surprise at the ribs turned to shock when I ordered a pint of beer to accompany the ribs. "What?" I asked her with a smile. "We're on holiday now. Time to let loose a little." We sat at our table and looked around at the other travelers. Demi and I always played this game where we imagined where people were going and why. We sat talking about people and laughing, even when our food had arrived. The ribs looked sublime. They were falling off the bone and absolutely drenched in sauce, while Demi's plate looked more in line with something you would see on a cooking TV show. I could tell she regretted her decision somewhat, and as any loving fiancé would, I gave her one of my ribs to try. "You always order food that tastes better than mine," she complained jokingly. "I think I should just let you order for me from now on," she continued. I laughed and agreed, while wiping a bit of barbecue sauce off her chin, a sure sign that she was enjoying her meal. We ate slowly, enjoying each other's company and talking about what we were going to do once we had arrived. Before we knew it, the intercom was sounding and alerting us that the boarding gates were now open. Finishing off the last of my beer, we settled the bill, grabbing our bags and made our way to check in. The gate was crowded as was to be expected, but with the rack of ribs and beer in my belly, I wasn't too fussed with the slow-moving line. We slowly made our way to the front of the line, scanned our passports, and walked on to the airplane. We found our seats, stowed our overhead bags, and settled in. Demi unpacked her iPad and headphones as she prepared for the 4,000-mile journey. As for me, one of my greatest attributes is to being able to sleep almost on command. So my plan for the flight was to kick back, sleep, and wake up when we got to Michigan. The airplane wasn't anything spectacular. Your usual three-row seats on either side with a row down the middle, a small screen to watch whatever movies they decided were best for entertainment. Demi could never sleep on flights, so she would download as many movies and episodes of series as she could, so that she wouldn't be bored while I slept. Often we would watch each other, but odds are I would fall asleep before we even watched one movie. No sooner than when we had taken off that I felt my eyes getting heavy with sleep. I welcomed the darkness with open arms. Sleeping is amazing. It's like a time machine to the future when you're traveling. You sleep, and all of a sudden, you're at your destination. I was jolted awake after what felt like a few minutes of shut-eye. I stared around in shock, confused as to what was happening. Demi laughed as she told me that the pilot had said they were descending and to prepare for slight turbulence as we dropped towards the ground. My pounding heart slowed down slightly as I looked at the completely calm passengers around me. The fear turned to excitement as the realization that we were nearly touching down came to me. We were about to land. Demi gripped my hand as we approached the ground. I couldn't tell if she was somewhat nervous or the excitement had gotten to her too. Once we landed, the plane disembarked relatively quickly, and we were once again in a line to get our passports stamped. That too didn't take long, and we hastily made our way through duty-free towards arrivals. Once we got through, the figure of Joseph was waiting for us with the biggest smile on his face. It had been years since we had last seen him, and the joy was contagious. I immediately bursted into a grin and quickened my pace to meet the smiling man. I had met Joseph in preschool, and throughout our years in education, we were in the same school right up until the end. We parted ways to go to the university, as we envisioned different paths in life regarding our career choices. Even living thousands of miles away from each other for so long, we chatted frequently and checked in with one another. It was a friendship that had stood the test of time. With my quickened pace, Joseph was very soon right in front of me. We didn't even say anything. We simply laughed and embraced. Demi approached us and we disengaged the embrace so Joseph could greet her. He took a step back and looked at us with a gleam in his eye. "Oh man, I can't believe you guys are really here," he exclaimed to us. "I had hoped you two would come for the wedding, but coming this far before is a real treat. It's been so long since I've seen you guys." "We wouldn't have missed your wedding for the world," I told Joseph with a smile. "And what could be better than coming and spending a bit of time seeing where you have decided to set up shop?" I asked him. "Let's get going. I can't wait for you guys to meet Elizabeth." Joseph's hulking figure lurked towards us and retrieved Demi's bag. "You're a big man, Alex. You could pull your own bag," he said with a laugh. His dark hair and dark skin turned in a flash, and in the blink of an eye, he was a good distance ahead of us. I'm by no means a small person. I stand at a humble height of around 5'8", but what I lack for in height, I make up for in stature. Having weight trained religiously for almost my entire life, I have a pretty good decent amount of muscle on me. With age, I've turned the intensity down a bit and become a little bit softer in certain areas. Joseph, in comparison, was over 6 foot. He never explicitly said outright how tall he is, but pretty tall is the answer. He was never one for the gym, and his tall frame had always been filled out by a pretty solid physique brought about by sports and eating takeaways. If I had to describe him in one word, it would be burly. We were soon out of the airport and heading towards a pretty big truck. Right off the bat, the stereotypical image on American Living popped into my head. A burly man in a flannel shirt driving a huge truck. Once again, I found myself chuckling to myself. "You're really enjoying talking to yourself, huh?" Demi said, smiling. "The best company you can keep is yourself," I replied with a smirk. Once we were at Joseph's truck, he gently lifted the bags into the back and closed the cover over them. "Jump in, guys. We got a bit of a drive ahead of us," he warned. Living deep in the woods, are you? Demi asked playfully. I didn't expect the stone-cold reply of, Yeah, kind of, but I like the peace and quiet. As we drove through the bustle of the town, I couldn't help but wonder about where we were going. I'm not the biggest fan of city life, and so I was quite excited that we would be staying away from the bright lights. We took the time we had during the drive, about an hour or so, according to Joseph, to find out more about Elizabeth. Demi and I obviously chatted with her on Skype and FaceTime when we had called Joseph, but we wanted to know the small things about her so we could really get to know the woman who was marrying my oldest friend. The conversation flowed, and I barely noticed the transition from the city lights to the trees covering us from both sides. Nearly home, Joseph said excitedly. Less than 100 meters later, we turned off the main road onto a dirt road. I thought he would have lived kind of in the woods, but I definitely wasn't expecting a literal cabin in the woods. As we drove down the dirt path, we approached his house. It was a pretty humble, old-style farmhouse kind of home. There were absolutely no neighbors around. That shocked me almost as much as how much woodland surrounded us. Yo, why haven't you got any neighbors? I asked Joseph. You're just used to living like sardines, aren't you? Joseph replied jokingly. This made Demi and I burst out laughing. Residing in England, most houses are semi-attached. So it's almost like one house split right down the middle, and then shared as two houses. So I guess he had a point. We don't live like that out here. Here, you have so much space as your garden, it's incredible. All the forest is virtually untouched. Our nearest neighbor is miles away. And Joseph, being Joseph, had finished the statement with a creepy line from a horror movie. Out here, no one will hear you scream. He laughed. We pulled up his driveway into the side of the house. Elizabeth was standing at the door waiting for us, the lights in the house shining brighter than the stars above us. Home sweet home, Joseph told us as he threw the gear knob into park. With the visible excitement of a child at Christmas time, he jumped out of the car and ran the few steps to his future wife. Babe, they're here, look! He shouted with glee. He quickly returned to the truck and hauled the bags towards the house, encouraging us to go inside and settle in. It's so nice to finally meet you, Elizabeth said with just as much excitement as Joseph. They had the same energy. They were a perfect match. We've talked so much, but meeting in person is just the best, she continued. I couldn't agree more, I replied to her with a friendly smile. We exchanged pleasantries and gave her a tentative hug after traveling for so long. You guys must be exhausted. Why not freshen up before dinner so you could relax? She asked us. That sounds absolutely delightful, Demi said with a smile. We walked through the living room, guided by Joseph. The living room was pretty eerie, with the heads of more than a few animals decorating the walls. Become quite the hunter, I see, I inquired. Yes, sir, nothing like going into the woods and bagging a prize. I'll take you guys if you're up for it. I know you guys love the outdoors. That would be great, we'd love to, Demi and I said in unison. I mean, if you guys are up for it, Elizabeth's brother was actually pitching a tent not too far from here. If you guys are feeling jet-lagged and don't want to sleep yet, we could take a walk and sit by the fire. Walking in the quiet of the night is a beautiful experience, Joseph continued. Having slept for the whole flight, I didn't feel at all tired, and so the offer actually sounded pretty good to me. I figured a walk would make me a little tired, and the fresh air would definitely relax me. I'm keen, I replied in a heartbeat. I'm a bit tired, but if it's not too far, I'd be happy to come too, Demi said. Great. Let's eat and get going. No point in showering now. You'll want to shower once you get back, rather, Joseph told us. I didn't realize just how hungry I was. I had 2 full plate servings of beef stew and potatoes, It was very tasty, and an extremely different flavor from the usual cooking in England. We washed the stew down with a logical brewed beer that Joseph said paired extremely well with the meat. I have to agree with him, as the beer tasted fantastic when we guzzled it by the pint while we ate. With the plates barely cleared, Joseph asked Elizabeth if she was coming. His question was met with a groan and complaints about not wanting to get dirty. After a bit of persuasion, Elizabeth finally gave in. Ever since we were kids, Joseph had an incredible knack for badgering people into saying yes, even after they had repeatedly said no to something. Joseph retrieved flashlights from a storage cupboard and handed one to each of us. "It gets pretty dark out," he advised. "There isn't much light pollution, so the only light is the good old moon." We set out, with Joseph leading the pack. The path wasn't quite wide enough for us to walk side by side, so we walked in a single line formation. I brought up the rear, with my reasoning being I could protect my woman if we were attacked by a bear or something if I was behind her, seeing as Joseph and Elizabeth were ahead of us. The trees surrounded us seemed to almost suck the light directly out of our flashlights. Every time we would shine my light towards the trees, the light seemed to almost disappear just as soon as I had lifted the beam. I opted to keep my light trained on the ground ahead of me. Joseph called back some facts about Michigan and the surrounding woods every so often. I couldn't quite hear him, but I appreciated the sentiment. We walked for about 20 minutes when I could see a flickering light not too far ahead of us. The silence startled me. Usually in the woods, you could hear branches snapping and the crickets and other nocturnal animals going about their lives. It was eerie, this silence. Almost as if the animals had opted not to come out and stayed in their burrows and trees. As we approached the light given off by a fairly large campfire, we saw the figure huddled over with their back turned to us. We were but a few feet from it, and they didn't seem to have heard us. "Hey, Daniel," Joseph hollered, shattering the silence. The figure turned around slowly, revealing a stone-faced gentleman, roughly about our age if I had to guess. "Why do you need to shout? I was enjoying the silence," the figure answered in an annoyed tone.
"Sorry about that, bud. I'm just super excited. Alex is here," Joseph said.
"That's nice and all, but there's really no need to be so loud," Daniel said as he stood up. He shook mine and Demi's hand very firmly, and softly said something about having heard all about us. "We thought we'd come out here for a bit and sit by the fire, show Alex and Demi the beauty of the woods at night," Joseph explained.
"Okay, have a seat," Daniel said, gesturing towards the wooden stools posted around the inferno.
We all sat side by side. No one spoke for a while. We just gazed into the fire, almost as if hypnotized. It was, of course, Joseph that broke the silence. All he did was comment on how beautiful the night was, and how you don't get to see the stars like this in the city. It seemed to set Daniel off, and he stood up and glared at Joseph. "Why do you find it so hard to sit quietly? Are you a frickin' child?" he hissed at Joseph. It was quite strange. Daniel couldn't have been much taller than me, with considerably less muscle or fat on him. Joseph would completely tower over him if he stood up. As Daniel stood up, his blonde hair bounced. His bluish-looking eyes seemed to flicker with a deep sense of rage. Joseph, however, didn't even flinch. He didn't even look at Daniel. All he said was, "Relax, dude. We're just here to enjoy the fire. Don't be so rude in front of our guests, please." This seemed to infuriate Daniel more than a mouthful of verbal abuse, and he turned to walk away before we could open our mouths to say something. What surprised me was that he walked towards the thicket of trees and not towards the path from which we came. His tent was in the clearing near the fire, and I didn't see him carry a flashlight.
"Yo, what's that all about?" I asked the nonchalant couple sitting with us.
"Daniel is interesting," Elizabeth replied. "Interesting isn't quite the word I'd use.
He's more of a runt with a C, Joseph corrected her. He practically lives in the forest and feels like it's super important to be respectful and honor the wild, Joseph continued. He doesn't like to be disturbed when he's out here doing his thing, Joseph added. I didn't see him carry a flashlight or anything, Demi asked, almost as if she read my mind. Joseph shrugged and replied, I don't know, he probably knows the terrain from memory and he uses the stars to navigate or something, who knows? I barely knew Daniel, but concern for his safety washed over me, especially as Joseph and Elizabeth didn't seem fazed at all. Aren't there any animals out here that could hurt him down? I asked. We got black bears, but they aren't known for being aggressive. They're usually pretty shy, and they'll only really attack if they feel threatened, Joseph reassured me. Okay, so we're just going to chill here, or? Demi asked uncomfortably. No need for us to get in a huff about Daniel. He'll calm down and come back. Enjoy the wilderness and the fresh air, Elizabeth said with a seemingly forced smile. Once again, I got lost into the flames. It was as if my very soul was absorbed by the fire and I couldn't look away. It was almost meditative. I felt extremely relaxed but also mindful of my surroundings. A thought crossed my mind about how incredible it felt. And for a moment, I could almost relate to Daniel in that I didn't want anything to disturb me while I was entranced by the dancing flames. As my consciousness seemingly drifted into and became one with the forest itself, I once again came to realize there was no sounds around us. Just as I was about to ask if anyone else noticed it, I knew without a doubt we all heard it. The scream seemed to pierce my very soul. From the extreme relaxation of the fire, I felt a fear I had never felt before. The scream sounded like it came from a soul being tortured in the very depths of hell. In my 27 years on this earth, I had never heard a more gut-wrenched scream. I looked around me and everyone was frozen in fear. No one moved. Eyes shifted to look around, but not one muscle was moved. I could see Demi trembling and I was instinctively reaching out to comfort her. She recoiled at my touch and shrieked in fear. Her scream was nowhere near what we had just heard. Joseph and Elizabeth didn't even flinch at Demi's shriek. Was that Daniel? I asked. No, it wasn't. It couldn't have been, Joseph stammered. Having been broken out of the frozen fear trance, Joseph stumbled and tripped, rushing to get to the tent. I was riddled with confusion, thinking he was hoping to see refuge in the flimsy tent. It was only when his top half emerged after rustling around in the tent that I saw the rifle he gripped with white knuckles. A branch snapped behind him and he turned with the speed I'd never seen and aimed the rifle in the dark. He backed slowly towards us, and we huddled into a circle of sorts with our backs towards each other, trying to peer into the dark. Should we go and look for Daniel? Demi asked fearfully. Did you hear that scream? It didn't sound like any sound a man could make. I've watched enough horror movies to know not to be a hero. We could run back to the house and call the police. Once we're safe in the house, we could plan better, Joseph suggested. Elizabeth hadn't said a word. She was as white as a ghost, with eyes that looked as if they would burst from her head. She just whimpered and whispered Daniel's name. Let's go. We can't stand around here waiting for whatever that was, I said. Equipped with our flashlights and Joseph leading the way with the rifle, we moved swiftly back to the trail that would lead us home. The trees that seemed somewhat entertaining on the way there were now taunting us, hiding something that could potentially harm us. Wolves, maybe? And if it was a wolf, surely there would be more than one. I thought I heard something behind me, so I turned to look. The lapse in concentration was enough to distract me to the fact that the line in front of us had stopped, and so I ran into the huddled group. Why the hell did you all stop? I screamed at them. No one answered me, as I collected myself and picked up my dropped flashlight. I lifted the flashlight and didn't understand what was going on at first. I couldn't comprehend what I was looking at. It was Elizabeth's scream that made me focus and understand it all. Lying in the middle of our path was intestines. I know exactly what they are because I had seen pigs being slaughtered in England. The blood covered the path ahead, and the internals were spread across the road in an almost playful display of malice. Joseph didn't say a word. He lunged over the intestines and shouted back at us to keep going. The blood seemed to sparkle in the light we shone it on. The dirt soaked up as much of the blood as it could, but the sheer volume of the blood left there meant the ground pooled on top of the path. We snapped out of the shock and moved forward to Joseph's light, as I see he had stopped to wait for us. We caught up to him and realized that he didn't stop to wait to us. He stopped because his arms and legs had now blocked the path. They had clearly been ripped from the body, and the loose ligaments and tendons hung to the dismembered body parts. Joseph had resigned to hunch over and vomiting into the trees. Elizabeth collapsed into the dirt and covered her face. Demi stood, gazing at the horror before us. I walked over to her slowly, wanting to be next to her in case whatever did this was close to us. I looked down and saw the arms and legs had been partially shredded. The bone was exposed going towards the hands and feet. Yet more blood pooled all around. Immediately, I wondered how much blood the human body contained for such amounts to be spread all around. I helped Elizabeth up, and she immediately collapsed again after looking at the mess in front of us. "That's Daniel's watch!" she screamed, pointing to the timepiece covered in blood on one of the arms. "What the hell did this to my brother?" she sobbed. Joseph pulled her up and hobbled through the appendices. They didn't stumble 5 steps before we heard the scream again. Demi gripped my arms so tight I could feel her nails penetrating my skin. I felt my body tremble. Whatever had done this was close. It sounded like it was right next to us. I switched off my flashlight and fumbled to get Demi's to do the same. She stifled a yelp and asked me what I was doing, but before I could answer, we were stunned by the sound of the trees ahead crashing down. The sound of the trees breaking and deafening, almost as loud as the fear-inspiring scream. The sound of Elizabeth and Joseph screaming made me instinctively turn the flashlight on to see what had breached the trees. What stood before me was something straight out of a nightmare. My flashlight did nothing more than illuminate the bits of the beast that had literally torn Daniel to pieces and strewn him all over the path. The thought of his intestines and arms and legs ripped off made my blood run cold. I was brought back to reality at the sound of the rifle going off. Demi and I trained our flashlights on the beast and saw Joseph had taken a shot at it. I don't think it did much, as the beast barely flinched. It stood dwarfing Joseph. It must have been at least 7 feet tall. Joseph just about reached half its height. The light we cast on it made the nightmare all the scarier. I got a glimpse of its red eyes, and they burned in the light like a coal. The blood soaking its muzzle dripped in spatters and hit the floor. I had no idea what it was. The best way to describe it is a huge, well-built wolf that stood erect. It was covered in thick-looking fur. As it snarled at my friend and his fiancée, I caught a glimpse of its teeth. It was as if a shark was crossed with a wolf from Red Riding Hood. I had no doubt that teeth like that were capable of making scraps of a body, as we saw with Daniel's body. I was frozen in fear, and the events seemed to almost happen in slow motion. It swung one of its front legs and completely knocked Joseph off of his feet in a fair distance away. It was as if a truck had hit him. I moved my light to check on Joseph, and he wasn't moving. I immediately moved back to keep my eye on the beast, as it hadn't noticed Demi and I by some miracle. It looked down at Elizabeth, and it seemed like there was a glimmer of excitement in its eyes. Drool dripped down into the blood, mixing together and falling to the ground. I whispered to Demi that we had to make a run for it. If we stayed here, we'd die. At the very least, the beast would be somewhat distracted by Elizabeth, and hopefully we could make it some distance and get away from it. Worst case, I would turn back and try to hold it off while Demi tried to get to safety. We had nothing to lose by trying to get past. Gripping her hand tightly in mine, I sprinted forward, making sure to glance down occasionally to ensure we didn't trip over something and end our escape plan before we even had a chance. As we approached the humongous creature, I stopped in my tracks as it felt like the heavens had opened up and poured rain on top of us. I looked to Demi and realized that what covered us was not rain, but rather blood. Turning to the beast, I saw a bloody mess. Blood spurted from the missing chunk of what used to be Elizabeth's neck. Whether it had bitten or slashed her neck with its claws, it had left a gaping hole. She didn't even have time to scream. Before we could react, the beast swung a claw at Elizabeth's chest. It looked as if a piñata had been struck. Her clothes seemed to explode into confetti as the nails ripped through her stomach. She collapsed to her knees with a pool of her own blood. The beast then lifted her ever so effortlessly and buried its face into her. I could hear it feasting from where we stood, and had the urge not to throw up the stew I had eaten. It pulled at her ribs and stomach, and again we were sprayed with bits of flesh and blood. There was a dull thud as it let her body fall to the ground. Her intestines fell next to her, seeming to catch her company. I heard yet another scream, but this scream was human. Demi quietly whispered, "He's alive." I turned the flashlight ever so slightly to focus on Joseph. He had a huge gash on his chest, and the blood had soaked every bit of his clothes. He looked as if someone had dumped red water onto him. He had propped himself up against the trees and just bore witness to his fiancée being torn apart by an ungodly creature. The scream caught its attention and turned to Joseph to finish what it had started. The blood dripped from its face as it looked hungrily at my best friend. Part of me wanted to close my eyes. I could feel Demi shaking uncontrollably next to me, her arm gripping onto me, seemingly holding on for dear life. Deep down, I knew holding on to me was futile. Holding on for life seemed almost comical to me. I sure as shit couldn't save myself from this beast, let alone save my partner. "What shall we do?" Demi asked with a shaky breath. "Honestly, we wait for it to go to Joseph and we run." I was blinded by the beam as Demi turned her flashlight towards me. The light seemed to burn my flesh in the darkness of the night. "You're joking, right?" she whispered angrily at me. "We can't just wait for him to be savaged and hopefully we get away. We need to try something." I don't know what we could possibly do to this thing. It's a werewolf or something," I whispered back to her angrily. It seemed that my deep-rooted fear had turned to anger at the thought of not being able to run for my life. But deep down, I knew Demi was right. Part of me knew that we were going to die anyways, and so surely it was better to die trying to save Joseph than die like a coward. Also, if I managed to distract this spawn of hell, Demi might be able to get back to the house. Before we had time to react, the gleaming red eyes were looking down on the bloody mess that was Joseph. His scream had turned into the saddest and most pathetic whimper I had ever heard. Once again, my blood ran cold as the scream of the monster pierced the night sky, almost as if it was showing Joseph how to scream.
Joseph's soaked clothes were made all the wetter by the drooling beast above him. It dripped blood and saliva on him, looking down on him as any apex predator would a defenseless creature it was ready to devour. The nightmare in front of us was not perturbed in the slightest by the beams trained on him by the flashlights. Demi and I both had our flashlights pointed directly at it, frozen in fear. One would have thought we were in a slasher film with the amount of blood spraying around us. Demi and I were drenched in the blood and bits of Elizabeth, but the trees keeping us boxed in were painted red with the life force of our friends. Adding to the red mess, the beast bent down and seized Joseph by the leg. Another scream echoed throughout the resting place of Elizabeth, as Joseph bellowed in pain as his bones were undoubtedly crushed by the repulsive jaws that had torn apart his fiancée. It pushed through the tree line, dragging my best friend with him like a dog does with a bone. Joseph had stopped moving and was either dead or had lost all strength and drive to live. And I don't blame him. Our flashlights followed the creature as it moved, and we bore witness to Joseph's leg come clean off his body. As it dragged him into the abyss, the force it had used to torture Joseph by tearing his leg obviously proven to be too much, and the leg was being held on by nothing more than a few tendons. Joseph's big frame, although dwarfed by the creature, weighed him down enough to separate his leg from his body. The creature seemed content to have mauled at Joseph and continued its withdrawal, red eyes and daunting figure disappearing into the trees. The trees around us shook and cracked as the beast seemed to move in all directions around us. We stayed frozen. Unsure if we should run or stay where we were, debating if the sound of us moving would bring the nightmare back to us. The scream that we had heard it emit sounded again. This time, it sounded as if it was quite a distance away. How on earth could something move that quickly? I could feel my heart almost stop beating completely as a groan came from the mangled mess ahead of us. Somehow, Joseph was alive. Impulse took over, and I pulled Demi by the hand to him. Our flashlights bobbed as we made our way over the scattered flesh and puddles of blood. The silence surrounding us was deafening. Joseph looked nothing more than a heap of blood and shredded clothes. We casted our lights on his face, and his eyelids fluttered open ever so slightly. Blood covered his face completely. There was not a patch of skin not soaked in red. He coughed weakly and blood trickled down his chin. I couldn't but help draw the comparison to how both the predator and the prey both seemed to be drooling blood. His leg flowed like a fountain, and the smell of metal filled the air around us. Goodbye, pure fresh air. Holy shit. I managed to get out. We need to stop the bleeding, Demi ordered, seemingly having snapped out of her shock. I could barely move, and here she was, knowing exactly what to do in the face or muzzle of danger. Demi was crouched beside Joseph, boots soaked in the blood. I slipped my belt off my waist and settled it down beside her. We need to get out of here. We don't know where that thing is, I told Demi. We can't leave Joseph. He's still alive, she responded. How the hell are we going to carry him? I asked her in frustration. I never swore when speaking to Demi, and I guess fear brought out the worst in me. Let's stop the bleeding, and we'll cross that bridge when we get there. As we hooped the belt around the stump where the leg used to be, it made the most disgusting squishing sound. Blood poured profusely from the wound, and I thought our efforts were futile. Joseph groaned slightly as the belt tightened against his skin. There was nothing we could do about the gash in his chest, and I just hoped it would not cause him to bleed out as we devised a plan of action. Our hands looked as if we were operating on someone with no gloves. In that moment of helping Joseph, Demi and I both seemed to have forgotten about the menace that had launched this atrocious attack on our group.
With Joseph somewhat patched up, there was nothing left to do besides decide what we would do.
"We can't be that far from the house," Demi reasoned with me.
"That may be the case, but Joseph weighs like 100 kilos, I countered her argument with.
"We have to try. Please, this is crazy. What kind of people would we be if we just left him?" she asked.
"Well, we would most probably be survivors if we left him, so alive. That's the kind of people we would be," I said with unintentional sarcasm.
"Grab his arms. We could carry him together," came her reply.
"He's going the slowest down," I said to Demi. "We don't know where this creature is, and when it will come back. We need to move as quickly as we can to get back to the house."
"Go on then," Demi screamed at me, obviously pissed. "I'll drag him home myself."
I felt as though I could have cried in that moment. I wanted nothing more than to curl up in a ball on the ground and just cry. I had progressed well past fear and was experiencing completely new feelings. Without another word, I stepped behind the upper half of the one-legged man and began scooping the mess into my arms. Joseph's head nodded from side to side as if he was agreeing with what we were doing. Demi made a concerted effort to be as gentle as she could to avoid knocking the secured stump. The task was hard as is, trying to pick up a person seemingly the size of a fridge. Demi was clearly giving everything she had, and was struggling beyond measure. The absurd amount of blood covering all of us made the task almost impossible, factoring in that we had to put the flashlights under our arms to provide us with some light as we would begin our hobbling journey throughout the trees. We moved as best as we could along the path, straining more than I thought I ever could, while simultaneously doing all that we could do to keep as quiet as we could. Absolute silence. I could hear nothing but the faint breath coming from Joseph, and the pain grunts from Demi as she scuffled alongside me. I nearly dropped Joseph when I heard the scream. I have never seen a demon, but I presume that's how a demon would scream if ever one did. The sound was much closer to us than the last time.
"It's back," I hissed at Demi. "We need to move faster," she said, and with an almost movie-like burst of strength, started moving quicker than she did before.
I matched her speed as to not disrupt the rhythm that we had going in our movement, and had to resist the urge not to spin around and loom into the trees for the haunting red eyes. I stifled my scream when I could hear branches snapping and the trees very close behind us parting to make way for the monster. As terrified as I was equally as thankful that the sounds were coming from the trees that were on my side of the path. If it spent as much time tearing me up as it did the others, it would give Demi the chance to hopefully make it back to the house. My thoughts were racing, and a sense of dread and hopelessness washed over me. Why would we be safe in the house? This creature tore people apart effortlessly and ran dozens of miles in an instant. I had no doubt it would be able to get into the house. There was no time to think about that, though. If at least Demi could make it back, she could use the satellite phone that we had seen in the living room to call for help. Hopefully, they could get to her in time. We definitely couldn't rely on the neighbors. The odds of them hearing us were zero. The creature seemed to be taunting us. I had absolutely no doubt it was faster than us, but for some reason it just about kept pace with us. The branches continued snapping behind me, but Demi seemed unbothered by it, and kept moving as quickly as she could. Her bravery encouraged me, and I ignored the menace giving chase, and plodded along as quickly as possible. Not too far ahead now, the lights left on in the house became visible. The hope I had lost returned at the sight of the lights. Maybe the woods had thickened to the point they were impenetrable, and the monster could not break through. Maybe it wouldn't be able to break down the thick door that led into the sanctuary that was a safe haven for the shredded man I now carried. If we could barricade ourselves in the bathroom, perhaps we would be okay. I knew Demi saw the lights, but her determination seemed to keep her silent, and she plowed along as she had done the whole time. Once we get off the path and the house is near, I want you to run as fast as you can. I'll drag Joseph by myself. That will slow you down even more. We have to do this together, she said in between each heavy breath. No, I said sternly. Our only chance is if you get to the house and call for help. Just look on the refrigerator for the emergency contact numbers. I'm not leaving you behind, she told me, even more sternly than I had. There's no point in both of us dying. If it attacks us, I'll try to hold it off as best I can. You always said you wanted to see my karate training. This is my chance to show you, I said jokingly, trying to make myself feel better about the suicide mission I was about to attempt. We can fight it together, she said shakily. We both know how that won't work out. Please, just get help, I asked her, extreme depression in my voice. Okay, came her hesitant reply. We scrambled off the trail, within a stone's throw from the house. We were finally so close. It had seemed like we trekked hundreds of miles, all the while being pursued by a beast that was going to rip us to pieces and dine on our insides. I braced myself and waited for the muscular limb of the creature to swipe at me and relieve me of a good portion of my body. Nothing hit me. I can't hear it anymore. Where did it go? I asked Demi nervously. I have no idea, but just keep moving. We kept the pace and neared the house. Once again, my doubts about the safety of the house came flooding back. If we sit in the house, we'll be waiting for our death, I prompted. So what should we do? Demi replied. Let's drive and get to the neighbors. We have no idea how long the authorities will take to get here. I'm sure in this kind of place the residents will have guns, I told her. She didn't need to say anything for me to know that she agreed with my suggestion. We finally reached the truck and I had never felt so relieved in my life. Demi lowered the leg she was carrying and threw open the passenger door. I stuffed Joseph in with no concern about his missing leg and pushed Demi to get inside. Running to the kitchen door we had entered upon arrival, I felt as if there was without an uncertainty that there was a God. The keys that were left right on the counter near the door. I picked them up and swiveled to my heels, heading back to the truck. I stood right where I thought it was going to attack us. The shine of the moon casted a brilliant beam down onto it, seeming to illuminate nothing but the beast. I knew it was huge from the encounter in the woods, but now I could see the extent of its size. It stood upright, muscles bulging all over its body, as if it had dedicated its whole life to weightlifting. The claws that protruded from its hands hung menacingly at its side, the length of them making me think small knives had been stuck onto its hands. The glowing red eyes that had been an indicator of its presence, situated above the beastly snout we had seen covered in blood. Ears perked up like a German shepherd, it stared at us, not moving. In what felt like slow motion, I sprung into the driver's seat and jammed the keys into the ignition. I reversed with the speed and precision of a professional stunt driver and launched the car into first gear. The gravel kicked up around the tires, slowing us down. The truck picked up traction and accelerated as well as it could. Demi and I sat in shocked silence, disbelieving we had managed to get to the car, least of all carrying a mammoth of a man slumped next to us. I veered to the side when I caught a glimpse of the red eyes bounded ever so close behind us. I knew it was too good to be true. The monster had given chase yet again, this time on the open road. The headlights illuminated the vast trees around us, and I wondered if driving into the thicket would do any good. Maybe I could slow it down and try to run the beast over. It was catching up very quickly, the engine straining on third gear. Engaging fourth gear and picking up speed, the gap between us and the beast seemed to be increasing. It was fast as hell, but the glory of modern mechanics seemed to be bettering it. Out of what I presume must have been an irritation, the demon scream rang through my ears. It did not let up the speed, and I heard Demi began to sob quietly as we climbed over a slight hill, and we gazed upon the lights of a house not too far from where we were. "It's okay, babe. There's going to be people there. We're going to make it. It can't keep up with the car," I reassured her. I checked the rearview mirror, and no longer saw the red eyes that chased us unrelenting. "We've lost it. Look behind us. It's gone," I told Demi. I didn't have time to react when the flash of fur bursted through the tree line. It collided with the front of the car with the force of a tank, and sent us off course towards the trees. As my head connected to the steering wheel, again I heard the scream as I felt my eyes close. I did my best to keep them open, but the blood pouring from the split in my head assisted them with closing.
"Don't move, buddy. Just stay still," the light said to me.
It felt as if there was an axe in my head. Why would heaven have pain? Maybe I had gone to hell.
"You guys all right? We got you,"
another voice sounded from the brightness. Once again, I felt my eyes grow heavy and the darkness begin to consume me. Maybe the bright light was purgatory, and now it was time to see if I was destined for eternal life or eternal condemnation. I finally woke up, my head banging like a marching band had taken up residence inside. I turned slowly, groaning in pain.
What happened?"
I asked the figure standing not too far from where I seemed to be laying.
"It nearly got you. We saw your headlights and stepped outside. We don't get many visitors, so we thought it was strange.
We rushed over as soon as we saw the lights head towards the trees," the voice said as it turned to me. My vision was blurry, and I could just about make out the massive beard covering my savior's face.
"Where's Demi?"
I asked, doing my best to sit up.
"Easy, fella," the beard said to me. "Your missus is fine. She's laying down in the other bed over here. We've done the best we can with the other guy. The ambulance should be here soon to take you guys to the hospital."
"What the hell is that thing? What did that to us? Where is it?"
I asked him in a panic.
"It's gone now. We know how to get it to stop what it's doing, but it only works for a little bit. Once it's gone, you gotta get away as soon as you can."
"You know what it is?"
I asked him.
"Of course. We've been dealing with it for generations. We do our best to avoid it, and it doesn't come to us. As they say, prevention is better than cure."
"Thank you. Thank you for helping us," I sobbed, letting my emotions flow freely.
"We tried talking to your buddy about it, but he always seemed to be busy. We never got the chance to warn him. If he had taken the time to hear us, he could have avoided this, unfortunately.
We know its routine and how it functions," he informed me. "We normally head out for the year and leave the houses empty when we know it's going to be hunting," he continued.
"How on earth can you possibly know when it's going to be active?" I asked.
"Because it doesn't change. Every 10 years it plagues these lands. My great-granddaddy saw it first, set traps, and was killed by it. Ever since then, my family has passed down what to do when it rears its ugly head. But for the most part, it's safer to just take off and just leave it be."
"So what exactly is it?"
I asked, knowing we had to leave this godforsaken place.
"No one knows exactly what it is. but we call it the Dogman.